Hello and welcome to the opening bell, the Boxing News podcast. My name is Matt Christie. Again, John Dennan is just next to me here with a few things to talk about this week. There's an interesting fight going on up in Hull this weekend, one of your favourite places on the planet.
I've been to Hull several times.
And there was one or two fairly interesting things going on last week. There was some somewhat, I think, understandably predictable action in London, wasn't there, at Wembley, given what is on the cards for Frank Bullioni and Billy Joe Saunders in the immediate future. We're not a big fan of overly predictable fights, of mismatches, but you can understand where Frank Warren was coming from with the matchmaking in this one, can't you? It was a card to get everybody in action, get everybody back on track and get some of the people kind of warmed up for world title fights. And I thought it was fine, in all honesty. It was job done.
Yeah, I mean, nothing to get too excited about, but at least they're on their way to big fights, Buglioni and Billy Joe Saunders, so they just had to they had to tune up and get through them. They have the next step laid out. Nice to see Derek Chisora back.
Derek Chisora, we spoke about him last week, didn't we? We mentioned we were wondering whether there was any route back for him. Well, that's a good start, isn't it? What is it, 30 seconds his opponent lasted? 39 seconds, something like that?
There you go.
Does that say more about the opponent, though, than it does Chisora?
I fear, as much as we'd like to, can't read too much into this. But I suppose it was Mitchell Smith who made the sort of statement in Britain of the weekend.
He was the star of the show, wasn't he? I mean, he certainly had it seemed like on paper he had perhaps the toughest match on the card. And he won it absolutely emphatically.
Yeah.
Really, really, really good result. He's calling out Josh Warrington. What do you think of that?
I think that's a good fight. I think it's a really good fight. I suppose the point of comparison, because Mitchell Smith stopped someone who went 12 rounds with Josh Warrington, and then you think, oh, right, well, he's got to be, you know, so much better if he stopped in a round. But Josh Warrington's not a hard puncher. He's sort of, you know, his key is sort of work rate, and he's actually pretty good. So I think it's, you know, it's hard to make too much of the comparison. I still think it's a good fight.
Okay, so moving over to Las Vegas, Nevada.
Are we? Oh, that'd be lovely.
Wouldn't it? Well, it wouldn't. You don't want to live in Las Vegas, surely.
I do, mate.
I think a few days in Las Vegas.
And one of those little buggies everyone drives around with. You'd have those plastic tubes full of drink.
True.
You just bowl down the strip. That would be...
True. It would be...
I'd wear a vest.
It would be nice to go over there for a full-scale jolly. I've never experienced
it. Forever.
Don't know about forever. I could probably handle it for a few days. But over there, Sergey Kovalev, he, as most predicted, had absolutely no trouble walloping Najib Mohammadi into smithereens in three rounds.
No.
There was a spite about his work. There was a feeling that he almost felt a little bit cheated by his opponent, in that Mohammadi was levels and levels below. And Kovalev said afterwards, I wanted more rounds. I wanted to make him look foolish like a clown.
And when he knocked him down the first time, he was kind of beckoning him to get up again.
Yeah.
Because he was sort of beneath him as an opponent.
So, in an ideal world, I mean, Sergey Kovalev is, I think most people would agree that given what he has achieved so far and the manner in which he has done it, he's the world's premier light heavyweight, obviously a division that's absolutely stacked with history. And all it would take to have a unified champion there is the small matter, one would think, of a unification fight with Adonis Stevenson. Is that the fight that would appeal to you the most, against Adonis Stevenson, the WBC champion, or should he be looking around elsewhere?
I do like Artur Beterbiev. I actually think he's the guy who's kind of, in my opinion, is the guy who's coming up to take over. But, you know, it just, Kovalev, Adonis Stevenson should have happened. And it's because we've been talking about it for so long. I'm almost bored of it now. And I just think if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now. Like, obviously the problems must be they're with different promoters, they're on different TV channels, same old, they've heard a million times.
Do you think it's going to happen?
Nah.
No?
But because Kovalev's stuck fighting Najib Mohammadi. Stevens's next bout is against Tommy Carpensi, I think. Yeah, and it's just like, what? I mean...
Did you purposefully make a bit of a meal of saying their surnames there?
Yeah. That was a rhetoric device I used.
Yeah, no, I hear you, though. It's very frustrating, and it's something that we've spoke about, not just with Kovalev and Stevenson, but when common sense is screaming for two fighters to get together for the good of the sport and it doesn't happen, I think perhaps it is increasingly the most frustrating thing about the sport.
Yeah, because last week I was more philosophical about Scott Quigg and Carl Frampton not fighting each other, but that was because there are at least, you know, if they're going in other directions, there are at least appealing fights for them to have in the other directions that they're going, as long as they get those appealing fights. In this case, they're both fighting, you know, not nobodies, but guys who are levels and levels below.
Yeah.
If one of them fights Beterbiev, I'm a happy man.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a great fight, isn't it? Beterbiev, but would it slip under the radar a little bit? Do you think it's not what you think that because it would be for all the gold, Kovalev Stevenson would perhaps drag in, you know, a wider sporting public. But Kovalev Beterbiev is almost just like a real treat for the boxing hardcore, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, cause how well known is Kovalev? Obviously within boxing he is, yeah. But is he that well known outside of the sport? Sort of, you know, even. Like Golovkin's more known, and he's not he doesn't hold three world titles.
We've got we were ringside for the fight in Vegas. Well, say we, the always excellent Kieran Mulvaney was ringside for us, and he's provided a report. We also speak to Andre Ward, and that's another fight. And we speak to Andre Ward exclusively. It's a really interesting interview with Andre about his opinions on fighting Sergey Kovalev. Is that a fight that's more likely, do you think, Ward against Kovalev, or is that as far away as Kovalev Stevenson?
I think it's probably more likely, but I wouldn't be massively optimistic about it happening. Ward doesn't sound in any hurry to move up to light heavyweight, though I personally think he should, because he sort of, you know, he needs a big name and he needs a big fight, and it's looking like he's going to be waiting around for ages at super middleweight for that to happen. So I'd probably say Kovalev Ward is more likely to happen eventually, but that could be something that we're waiting way into 2016 to happen. I think Ward said his sort of preference is Golovkin. For Golovkin to come up to super middleweight. But is that going to happen anytime soon? Golovkin's fighting David Lemieux, which is a great fight, I think, you know, for the available opposition. If he beats Lemieux, presumably he'll be waiting for the winner of Canelo Cotto if that fight gets made, which is looking likely as well. So I don't think Golovkin's going to be in any hurry to move up to super middleweight anytime soon.
The conversation we're having now perhaps started negatively in that we're a little frustrated that after all this time Kovalev and Stevenson hasn't happened. However, you just mentioned some fights and a set of events that could happen, which is really, really, really bright for boxing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's wonderful. If you know, Golovkin and
struggling with the names, eh?
Yeah,
is that deliberate?
That wasn't deliberate.
Gobbly.
That's just my usual pathetic manner. So Golovkin against Lemieux has been signed for Madison Square Garden in October, which, as you say, should be a lot of fun. Really, really looking forward to that. And then it's looking likely, I stress, that Cotto will fight Canelo. And then, of course, the winners will meet each other, which would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would be fantastic. Let's talk about Golovkin-Lemieux, which was confirmed. Your first comment about it was that, you know, it's good news, it's a great fight. Why is it?
Well, because even though everyone's going to think, and rightly so, that Golovkin's probably going to be a clear winner, maybe even take him out early, Lemieux comes with serious power. And, you know, we've seen Golovkin get caught and just shrug the punches off. So Golovkin can be hit. And if you need a Hail Mary punch out of nowhere to save yourself from Gennady Golovkin, Lemieux might have that punch. You just know, with those two punches in the ring, you just know someone's going to win by knockout. That someone is probably going to be Golovkin, but it'll be a good fight while it lasts.
They've both got a belt as well, haven't they? And Lemieux, I remember when Lemieux first kind of blazed onto the scene and he was knocking everyone silly, there was a real, real buzz about Lemieux, and then it all started to go wrong. I remember you spoke to Lemieux before it all started to go wrong. I'm not saying you're the reason why it was starting to go wrong, but having spent a lot of time with you, I could imagine that is possible.
I get in people's heads.
But he's often, when fighters come along and they've got almost that cloak of invincibility, like that indestructible kind of ring presence which Lemieux had prior to losing, when that goes, the fighter is never the same again, and it's rare for a fighter to come back from that and prove themselves again and get to the level that Lemieux has. So all credit to him, I think.
The way he's come back from those defeats, I was probably as guilty as anyone of thinking that's why, you know, that was kind of it for him, that he sort of found his level and wasn't going to make it to world class. But he's come back really well. He's probably corrected whatever he needed to correct. You know, he's had a couple of his recent, you know, he's had a couple of good wins recently, and of course won the world title. So it's sort of, you know, he's probably learned enough from those defeats to improve. So maybe that will make him a better fighter than he would have been. But is it enough to cope with Golovkin? I doubt it.
It's unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah.
The term live underdog is kind of thrown around quite a lot, but as is the term puncher's chance. But there's something that tells me it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lot of fun. It's one of those where you can almost guarantee, even if it's one-sided, it's going to be worth watching, isn't it?
If Winnie Munro, and I know we all feel that it's like that Golovkin now is the guy with that sense of invincibility about it, but Woody Munro Jr. gave him a few problems, was a little bit awkward, caught him a few times. So, you know, Lemieux isn't completely doomed.
That's good.
That's my analysis.
Unless he speaks to you again between now and the fight, I could send him mad again. Okay, so we have also, and speaking of middleweight destroyers, in this week's issue, we've got a really, really candid interview with Nigel Benn, where he talks about the past, present, and future. And, you know, Benn has been in the news recently with regards to comments that he's exchanged with Carl Froch, and he goes into detail about those. And, of course, there's been a lot of talk now where apparently both Nigel Benn and Chris Eubank want to fight for a third time, both of them. Ben just over 50, Eubank just under 50, 22 years since they last fought. In this week's issue, just a little taste there, Ben calls Eubank an idiot and makes it clear that, you know, he does want a third fight. I've looked around social media, this has been posted in a few places, and there's surprisingly a lot of positivity about this. A lot of people want to see Nigel Benn and Chris Eubank get back in the ring and renew their rivalry. What's your take on it, John?
I don't know. I'm really uneasy about guys who are sort of too old and should be long retired, sort of returning to the ring. You know, it's rarely for, you know, it's not for the right, just rarely for the right reasons. You know, maybe they want to recapture the glory of days past, or maybe they'd be doing it for the money. But either way, it makes me pretty uneasy, and I wouldn't. You know, there are a lot of far too. You know, it's just there are exceptions and exceptional fighters who can carry on till much older than most athletes should retire, but they're very rare cases, and too often you see guys who are too old and should hand the gloves up, carry on too long. And especially, you know, with people like this, there's so many other things they could do. I don't think they need to fight again.
Yeah, I think that. I don't think it's the be-all and end-all for them both.
Yeah.
If it doesn't happen, but
I suppose you could say at least they're as old as each other.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I'll go into detail about it all in the column this week. But I think you mentioned there, and it must be exceptionally hard for. I mean, I can only imagine what it's like to scale the heights that these guys scaled, and then probably mid-30s to realise that they could never do it again. And that's a lot of time, a lot of life left to have the glory days knocking around the mind and everything else. But you mentioned there occasionally there are people when people make a comeback, they use them as an example, like George Foreman, for example.
Yeah.
But with Foreman, you look at that career, and he retired for the first time in 1977. I believe he was in his late 20s. And he hadn't really had a full career at that point. Then he took a long time out, then he came back again. The likes of Eubank and Ben, though, have already had their full careers. They've achieved everything that they possibly could. They fought until they could fight no more. And Bernard Hopkins, I think we're just going to have to accept, is a bit of a freak of nature.
Yeah, and also he lived. You know, he lived sort of
throughout,
religiously, fanatically, dedicated.
From when he was sent to prison, from that point on, he has lived, like a Trojan.
Which is something Nigel Benn certainly didn't do.
No, absolutely not. But he goes into detail about those days, and it is really, really fascinating.
It's a good issue of the magazine this week.
It is. I've got a feeling, though, next week's going to be better. We're putting next week's together now, but there's loads of stuff in that. We'll talk about that next week anyway. But let's move on to where you're going to be spending your weekend, Hull.
Yes.
This
I'm
is
on a highway to Hull.
Highway to Hull.
On Saturday, we dine in Hull.
Do you know what? This fight, when it was first announced, I mean, I was a bit fearful that when they first started to build this one up, and it hasn't been the best kept secret, where it wasn't a secret, it's obvious what they were doing. They were building Coyle up and they were building Campbell up, and the idea was that they would fight each other. It didn't really appeal to me that much, in all honesty. I've got no affinity to Hull.
What are you trying to say?
And I just felt that Luke Campbell is probably a level above Tommy Coyle. I'm not saying that last opinion has necessarily changed, but the whole build-up to this has drawn me in. I think it's been brilliant. I think it's been absolutely brilliant, whether it's a matchroom masterstroke or whether it is the personalities of these two guys that have concocted this. It's brilliant. The fact that Tommy Coyle is acting like he's lost his long-lost friend. Luke Campbell's lording it around, acting like he's never known him. I just think it's fascinating, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
I do think it is like an interesting clash of personalities. I think they're very different people, but also like Campbell, you know, Kyle's really going to have his hands full with this fight.
How can Tommy Coyle upset Luke Campbell? I know you're a big Luke Campbell fan, so I'm probably asking the wrong man, and I'm not for one second suggesting Luke Campbell is invincible. He's not, but how do you beat Luke Campbell?
Because I suppose the problem Firstly, the problem Tommy Coyle's got is, yeah, you've got to be something special to outbox Luke Campbell. Yeah. Like, he really is excellent. I don't know if people have seen him that much, but he was a superb amateur and has sort of translated that pretty well, very well to the pros. You can't outbox him, he's got to try and get in close to him. But Campbell's a lot taller, he's got more range, and his defence is pretty good. He doesn't let a lot of silly shots through. So if you're charging in recklessly or just trying to force it too much, Campbell has shown as a pro he's actually punching a lot, or he's punching hard as a pro, like he's hurting people. He wasn't like like Joshua as an amateur was actually, he was stopping guys, whereas Campbell was never quite like that. But as a professional, maybe obviously they've been sort of, lower tier in terms of class, but he's still been stopping them. So it's a pretty hard conundrum to solve. Campbell fought in Birmingham against a French guy who I think, if not unbeaten, certainly hadn't been stopped. And I was a bit surprised in that guy did manage to get in close and sort of rough him up a little bit and land him, catch him with the odd shot. And I think Campbell was sort of, he wasn't moving his feet as much as he sort of should have been doing, I thought. Though afterwards he said that was his plan. He knew the guy was tough. He wanted him to come in so he could get him. So he said he was doing it deliberately. You just got to do something crazy.
Coyle's got to do something crazy.
He's
capable of doing something crazy, isn't he?
He does seem quite emotional. So, yeah, but, there is a reason Campbell's such a massive favourite. It's hard to know what department Tommy can sort of best him in. But I guess if he charges in, goes absolutely wild, roughs him up, looks for the massive kind of punch that stopped Katsidis, something like that.
You've sold it to me.
I don't know.
Cole's going to win this, he's going to win it big. You did a brilliant job there of changing my mind.
I tried.
Okay,
but it's sort of like, it's kind of a fight that had to be made because, they're both sort of rising lightweights in Hull, and there's clearly a huge demand to see it in the city. It's going to fill, going to get 15,000 people in the stadium. Even though Campbell's like, this shit, rightly the heavy favourite, it could be the most highly attended boxing event in Britain this year.
Wow.
Because if it's 15,000 and the other big ones have been in Sheffield or at the O2.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah. The O2 will be a bit bigger, the Royal Britannia one.
I expect it will be, all joking aside, a really, really good atmosphere and a really good night. Another fight that interests me on the undercard is the Brian Rose Carson Jones rematch. Now, is this a move from Brian Rose and his team and perhaps his promoters? If I don't do this, that is it. It's all over. It's kind of eggs in one basket kind of move here. He was stopped in the opening round by Carson Jones when they fought last time. There was initially a bit of an outburst that it was a premature stoppage. From memory, and I remember watching it, and I did think it was premature at the time, but then when you saw the replays, it was fair. So to go in against someone who stopped you in the first round without anything in between, no warm-up bouts, nothing, that's some big balls, isn't it?
Yeah.
First off.
Yeah, it is a risky move.
Even though that fight lasted, about 2.5 minutes? There was also a few encouraging signs in that for Brian Rose.
Yeah, as in he was winning most of the 2.5 minutes,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a good fight to make. It's just risky on Rose's part, but maybe they're thinking, you know, or maybe he's thinking, if I can't beat Carson Jones, where do I go? So let's just do it.
Let's just do it.
But, you know, it is a risk and it is a good fight. And problem is, if someone's got the sort of power to hurt you, which it looked really, even though there was debate over the stoppage, it does look like Carson Jones has the power to hurt him. You know, over 12 rounds, it's going to be hard to avoid getting hit at some point.
It really is. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. It's perfect. It's perfect for chief support.
And I think it's up at middleweight. So again, Rose might be more durable at middleweight.
If it's up at middleweight, that's definitely something in Rose's favour. Carson Jones, I didn't think was a light middleweight, let alone a middleweight. Kind of going back to what we were saying, they would not have made this fight. This fight wouldn't have been made, say, if going into their first encounter, Brian Rose was a real top prospect, 23 years old, and was 18-0. They'd take a different route, wouldn't they? They wouldn't go straight back in with a rematch. It is like the last throw of the dice.
Yeah. Well, you look at how, you know, Amir Khan recovered from his defeats. He didn't rematch them straight away. You know, he went quite a sort of clever route to rebuild and got himself sort of back to the top each time. So, but yeah, maybe they feel it's sort of, you know, if not now, when? They've got to go for it.
Are you saying then? Who's going to win it?
I think Carson Jones. If I had to bet, I'd bet on Carson Jones, but with no confidence. I'd say it is a 50-50 fight.
Incidentally, the guy that has composed the preview for us is Mr. Paul Wheeler, who, as I mentioned in this week's editor's letter, is on a 22-fight streak of correct predictions that he has called within Boxing News previews. And this fight, the Brian Rose Carson Jones fight, being as it comes before the Campbell Coyle fight, will be his 23rd. And yeah, get this week's issue to see what Paul Nostradamus Wheeler has gone for. He makes a good case for his prediction. I'll just leave it at that and just have a read. It's interesting. It's interesting stuff.
Also got Paulie Malignaggi, Danny Garcia.
Of course, this weekend. Yeah. Paulie Malignaggi,
just
Danny
sort of
Garcia.
An interesting fight.
Not really. Not for me. No. I mean, I'll.
You'll read the report in next week's magazine.
Yeah, I mean, I have to, but I'll be interested. I suppose I'll be interested to see how Garcia looks. Paul Malignaggi. I've always kind of liked him. I've admired his insight, his knowledge,
and his pluck.
I just feel perhaps he's been around a while now, and something about this fight bothers me a little bit. I can imagine it would probably go down quite well in Brooklyn. Garcia seems to have he hasn't really progressed. I mean, he had the fight with Khan, then there was a rematch against Derek Morales. Something else happened after that.
He was brilliant against Lucas Matisse.
Lucas Matisse, he was brilliant.
That on the Mayweather-Canelo undercard, he was fantastic.
That was his peak, and he was almost set for launch to land straight into the lucrative opposite corner of Floyd Mayweather, and then things just started to just go wrong. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see where he goes. I mean, he's still unbeaten, Danny Garcia.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the fact that after that, if you'd have said that he'd be following the Matisse fight, if you'd have said that in 18 months' time or however long it's been, that he's next, that right now, even though he's still unbeaten, he'd be facing Paul Malignaggi.
Yeah, 2 years later or whatever it was.
Because has Malignaggi fought since he was battered by Sean Porter?
That's a good point. He had a fight made that was cancelled because of a cut in sparring. So I'm not sure if he has fought since. Well, I'll have to read this week's magazine to find out. So, and it's kind of weird that it's taken until now for Garcia to move up to welterweight, because it could have been his struggles with the weight were the problem, and he could have been good at welterweight. But then why not just, you know, you should have moved up to welterweight ages ago and sort of...
I probably give Malignaggi a bit of a disservice. When he wants to be, he is an excellent boxer, excellent boxer. He could potentially make life really, really hard for Danny Garcia.
Garcia, he has been sort of struggling with his recent. He's either been in a, you know, in the positive side of a mismatch, or struggled with his recent opponents.
I just got a feeling it's going to be a horrible fight. I don't think it's going to be great fun.
All right, I won't stay up for it. I'll be winding my way back from Craven Park.
You do whatever you like. Daniel Jacobs against Sergio Mora. Again, oh gosh.
It's not. it's not setting the world on fire, is it?
No, I mean, Jacobs, I mean, he's got that wonderful, the wonderful story.
He is good. He is pretty good, Jacobs.
And he is very good.
I was actually at, I think, his last fight against Caleb Truax, and he was much better than Truax, but I was left a bit disappointed in that he won it comprehensively and made sure of every round, but he only really, you know, stepped it up right at the end to get the finish. He'd sort of step it up just before the end of the round to make sure he won the round, and just sort of, you know, clocked up the rounds as he sort of went through the fight. And I just felt he is good, and he must be very tough to box. You know, really long arms, and knows how to, you know, and pretty good skills. But there was something that just left me a bit flat about the last one, and I'm not really looking forward to seeing him versus the Latin Snake.
The Latin Snake has been known to post the odd upset. You can't write him off against Daniel Jacobs, though, can you?
No, but it's not a fight you want to write too much about in the first place.
It wouldn't be, and please, I'm not being disrespectful to either Mora or Malignaggi, but it wouldn't be the best news that boxing has ever had if Malignaggi and Mora won these fights, would it?
No, but what would it change?
You know, it's true.
It's not like, it's like Danny Jacobs is at middleweight, so you should be clamouring for, I know no one really, you know, I know Golovkin's like a fearsome prospect, but you should be clamouring for one of the recognised worlds, a fight for one of the recognised world titles. Danny Garcia has been at a sort of star level where he should have been in more big fights like the Matisse fight, and he appears to be quite content with the route he's gone. So, you know, if both of them win, just nothing's going to change.
Okay, all right, I'll go with that.
Because I just can't see what route they're on. You know, with some people see, okay, they're working their way to this particular rival or this particular fight. There's a sort of story to where they're trying to get to. Yeah, maybe you've got to get through a marking time fight to get there. But these fights are just kind of happening, and then, you know, then what? We're finishing on a dull note. Let's get back to Hull. That's going somewhere. The winner of that's an eliminator for a world title, eventually, sort of.
I think we'll probably leave it at that. What's been going down well on the website this week, John?
What's been going down well on the website? We've had some good Tyson Fury Klitschko stuff. The world interweb is loving that fight. We've just put up the top five opponents that would be best for Kell Brook next. So for his next fight, so that rules out sort of Mayweather and Pacquiao and Khan. But that's quite an interesting one. People are reading that. Loads of stuff.
What do you mean it rules out Mayweather? There's a date going begging, isn't there, against Mayweather?
Yeah, but come on, we all know who needs to line up in the opposite corner to fight Mayweather. it's Chris Algieri for his ending. Well, exactly, and also that's another thing. My Brooke Algieri campaign has taken a terrible blow.
What about Brooke Mayweather, though? In all seriousness, that's. I mean, I know it's not going to happen. By the way, I'm not suggesting that for 1 second. It's going to happen on September 12th. But Brooke could make a case of being the most deserving welterweight out there to take on Floyd Mayweather, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think he can, but. He was training for September 12. It was going to be Brandon Rios, but they couldn't make that fight happen. And then one of the reasons they were talking about not fighting on September 12 is they felt he needed a bit more of a break because he's already fought twice this year, and they didn't want him to be in permanent training camp. So now they're looking at October or November.
Are they though? Or are they going to fight Floyd Mayweather on September 12?
Is it, all right, it's the old fake out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's just not. You know, look, I'm all for it, but it's not going to happen.
There's obviously some issues behind the scenes with the whole Andre Berto thing, one would guess. Because this is. It's really, really. It's getting pretty close. What are we, 5 weeks away, 6 weeks away from September 12th? And there's still no opponent?
That's pretty crazy.
It's a bit. It's a bit farcical, isn't it?
Yeah. So what do you think will happen?
I suspect they'll come to an agreement. I think as you and I were talking about, I mean, prior to the Manny Pacquiao fight, and we were kind of hoping that it was going to happen, we also said to each other that, but there's nobody else making any noise whatsoever, that it could be them. So who on earth could it be if it's not Manny Pacquiao? And that was kind of the conclusion we kind of came to then at that point. Similarly, we're in that kind of boat now, in that if it's not Andre Berto, then who is it? Amir Khan has, rightfully I think, kind of said his piece about the whole situation. Like, you can completely understand why he's so peed off. But it was, for a while, looking like it was going to be Khan. Khan was the favourite. And then Berto suddenly became a favourite. So who else is it? If it's not Andre Berto, who else could it possibly be with 6 weeks left? Berto, we know, is in training. So who else could it possibly be?
Other than Chris Algieri.
I mean, seriously, there is...
Yeah, I just can't see who. I don't think Kell Brook's going to be ready for that day. I don't think... And you just see if Andre Berto is who they're talking about now, why would you take Kell Brook, who is so much more dangerous and not as well known, unfortunately?
It's true. We could be ending on another someone, but we have been talking for a while. It's approaching.
Sean Porter,
yeah. But
Adrian Broner?
Maybe.
You'd have to make that cruiserweight, probably.
True. Okay, well, hopefully next week we'll be talking about who Mayweather's fighting.
It's worrying that welterweight, which is the hottest division in boxing, that Mayweather is sort of seemingly struggling for an opponent. Kell Brook hasn't nailed down an opponent.
Khan's...
You know, he's open to fighting Kell Brook, but not till next year. It's strange that, well, I mean, we've had Mayweather-Pacquiao, but it's strange that that hasn't led on to lots of major fights at welterweight.
I think you can. It all does kind of come back to Floyd Mayweather, though, doesn't it? Because I think that, you know, Floyd Mayweather is kind of dilly-dallying, or his team are dilly-dallying on announcing the September 12th opponent. And if that had been announced a while back, maybe negotiations may have started for Brooke Khan or something like that. You know, everybody else would know what they were doing.
I see what you're saying. Floyd Mayweather is the sun, and everyone else is just orbiting
around
him. Well,
it's very much that kind of scenario, isn't it? It's very much that kind of scenario, and I think it'd be interesting when Mayweather eventually walks away, because we may get, people may stop just spending so much time focusing on Floyd Mayweather and have a look around and see that there is quite a lot of other things going on.
We'll
like
miss.
Us
we'll
too.
Miss.
Like us too. We won't have to keep talking about him every freaking week.
We don't have to, Matt. We want to.
Okay, right.
I'll miss him when he's gone.
Go on, right. I've got stuff to do and it's nearly the end of Friday, so I need to get back on it. So,
my computer crashed deleted all my work today.
You're going to be on holiday next week.
No, yes.
So I'll probably be dragging somebody else in to have a chat to.
I can fax in my comments.
Could do. That could get... If there's no...
Or you can read them out in my voice.
Yeah, I'd struggle with that, I think. Anyway, right. Thank you, everyone, for listening and your support and for reading the magazine. It is sincerely appreciated. And I will be back next week.